Well, welcome. So we're going to spend the next 45 minutes talking through attachment styles. First, we're just going to start out with a definition of attachment. What is it? We're going to move into how does attachment impact me? We're going to try to cover a lot of ground and then move into the couple relationship. But we need to start with, what does attachment mean for me individually, right? And then ultimately, after I know my own attachment style, how does that impact how we as a couple relate and interact together? How do we make sense of the cycle that sometimes plays out in our relationship that we don't understand, that doesn't have to do necessarily with money or in-laws or whatever the conflict is, okay? Okay, so I'm going to start with a quote, and this comes from, you can't see it there, it's How We Love, a book that I'll reference throughout here. So it says, after 14 years, though a huge change took place when we discovered the unseen forces that had determined how we loved. We realized our lessons in love didn't start in our marriage. They started in infancy and lasted all the years we lived with our parents. Our experiences growing up, good and bad, left a lasting imprint in our souls that determined our beliefs and expectations about how to give and receive love. So the premise of attachment, the idea is that there's a manual, so to speak, we already have coming into the marriage relationship. And it started right from when we were born, right? The interactions that we had with our parents formed, and you think about it, in the formative years of our lives, when our bodies are growing, our brains are growing, that we learn what to expect from relationships, how to treat each other, what love looks like, even things about God. And as we see our parents relate to us, so the premise of attachment is that this imprint, so to speak, of these interactions influence our relationship today. So I want to start with a video, okay, that represents this. And what you'll see here is maybe those that have studied or read about attachment have heard of the steel-faced experiment. Essentially what they did is they took a mother, they did this a number of times, but you'll see in this video the mother engaging her child. It starts out, she's engaging, playing with her child, they're responding, they're interacting together, and then all of a sudden she turns her face, she turns her back, and then she turns around and she has a steel face. Okay? Doesn't express emotion. Notice what happens to the child. Dr. Tronick, who actually videoed this, is talking in the background, so he will describe what's happening.
And she gives a greeting to the baby. The baby gives a greeting back to her. Yeah. This baby starts pointing at different places in the world, and the mother's trying to engage her and play with her. They're working to coordinate their emotions and their intentions, what they want to do in the world. And that's really what the baby is used to. And then we ask the mother to not respond to the baby. The baby very quickly picks up on this. And then she uses all of her abilities to try and get the mother back. She smiles at the mother. She points because she's used to the mother looking where she points. Yeah. The baby puts both hands up in front of her and says, what's happening here? She makes that screechy sound at the mother, like, come on, why aren't we doing this? Even in this 2 minutes, when they don't get the normal reaction, they react with negative emotions, they turn away, they feel the stress of it, they actually may lose control of their posture because of the stress that they're experiencing.
So, I have a question for you. Who taught that baby how to do that? Did the mom teach her that? I don't think so, right? It's something that the baby, right, when her mother was no longer engaging him or the child, it was deeply painful. And so the child was working to get the attention of the mother at any way the child could, right? And so the premise for the attachment system, right, that God has designed is to protest emotional disconnection. We need loving connection like we need oxygen. If you think about it, God has created us as relational beings. He is love. Therefore, we need him. And when we don't have loving connection relationally, we protest. Doesn't always, sometimes it does look like that child. when we even in our adult relationships. So the first is protest, you know, what's it for? Protest emotional disconnection. Next, it's get the spouse to see that you're disconnected. Again, it's painful to be alone and not to be seen, right? And so part of it, the attachment, is to try to get the attention, to try to reconnect. And then finally, get the spouse to respond in a loving manner, to soothe the emotion, to soothe the pain, all right? So we see this in Scripture, too. If you look at Psalm 38, 8 through 10, this is a, it'd be great to read through this whole psalm. It's a psalm David had, wrote about. And here, you will hear him talk about the separation from God. Now listen to the words that he's writing here. I am feeble and sore broken. I have roared or groaned by reason of disquietness or disquietness of my heart. Lord, all my desire is before thee, and my groaning is not hid from thee. My heart panteth. My strength faileth me. As for the light of mine eyes, it is also gone from me. David had sinned. He felt the separation. He was in deep pain and anguish that he felt internally, and he was crying out to God. So one of the things that we'll look at here is individually, what is our attachment style? There's a number of different attachment styles that they've talked about, okay? And when it comes to the attachment system, one of the things they talk about is a secure attachment. So with that child, a secure attachment means the mother or father is responsive to them when they are in distress. They don't ignore it. They don't minimize it. They accept. So a secure base looks like this. In Psalm 18:2, it says, the Lord is my rock and my fortress, my deliverer, my God, my strength, in whom I will trust, my buckler, and the horn of my salvation, and my high tower. So look at the metaphor, the rock. If you think about a rock, it's a place of stability. It's a place that we can stand, and it's solid ground. A secure attachment is a place that we can go, and we know they'll be there, right? A fortress, even if you look at this picture, a place of protection from the environment outside. A secure attachment means the one that we're attached to is a place of safety in the midst of, right, for that child, this dangerous world out there. And then finally, a place of deliverance, right? That we know that if we go there, we will be delivered. We will be soothed. We will be calmed. So what I want you to do is take a few moments and reflect on these two questions individually. First, can you recall being comforted as a child after a time of emotional distress? So an emotional distress meaning not just maybe you fell down and you scratched your knee, but a time when maybe your closest friend betrayed you, or you got made fun of in the midst of friends during middle school, or you didn't make the football, volleyball, whatever team. Think about how were you comforted, or were you comforted during that time? And secondly, what happened when you cried? I'll give you a few moments just to reflect on that. We're adults now. So it's easy, as from an adult perspective, to look back and say, that wasn't that big a deal. So one of the things that's helpful is to remember, what would it be like through the eyes of an 11-year-old or an 8-year-old or whatever age you were. Right? That's what we're talking about here. Not from an adult, because that's when it happened. And by the way, this is not about blaming parents. Okay? We all know we are imperfect. This is about coming to an understanding of what my experience was as a child and how it's impacted me and my relationship, my marriage relationship. So there's three components that are involved in comfort. The first is soothing touch. Throughout the Gospels, you can read of Jesus, and invariably, when he healed somebody, he touched them. There is power in physical touch, isn't there? In fact, it affects our body. There's hormones like oxytocin, which they call the cuddle hormone. By holding on to each other for at least, I think, 30 seconds or something, it starts releasing, right? That you have, actually, that's an exercise through attachment that they do, is have couples hug each other for a minute, right? And just hold on to each other. The next one is listen and accept. So the idea is when we're dysregulated, when we're in pain, does the parent listen, ask questions, seek to understand and accept the negative emotion? Or do we minimize? I can tell you from a parent's perspective, it's really easy just to minimize, right? But part of soothing is, well, yeah, it makes sense you're afraid, right? That fits with the situation. Again, we're talking about a child growing up giving language to their experiences. So the next component is listening and accepting. And then finally, relief. Once they're able to connect and give language to their experience, it provides relief. It's those three components that lead to comfort. So let's use an example, okay? I'm going to just review one attachment style. The rest of the attachment styles are in your appendix. We just don't have time to review all of them, but you will get the concept here from this. So let's start with a child. The child has feelings. So this is an avoider attachment style, okay? So the child comes to the parent, right? Emotionally distressed, right? The needs, right? The emotions are overwhelming to the parent, or the parent shows disinterest. Now, again, it may be because this parent is busy doing many things. And this isn't just a one-time occurrence, right? It's through multiple times. But this doesn't mean this is a bad parent or that they have malintent. But from the child's perspective, their needs are, they're overwhelming. So what does the child do? Well, maybe I shouldn't be having those feelings. Maybe I shouldn't be having that experience, right? So they begin to stifle or limit their expression to their parents. Because if I go to them in distress and they don't show interest or they don't respond, they don't provide me with a secure base, right, where there's soothing or comfort happens, then you know what? I'll just limit it. I'll stifle it. And then parents' response encourages limited emotional expression and doesn't comfort. If the parent's disinterested or they're busy with something else, they communicate. That's great. They took care of it themselves, right? They're communicating to the child. You can do it on your own. So the child restricts emotions, needs, and becomes independent. And eventually, they avoid emotions and needs of others and self. Right? They learn that from interactions in their family growing up. And we'll move into what impact this has on the marriage relationship. So what are the characteristics? Why does this matter? So as an adult, generally, avoiders are private and self-sufficient. Right? They've learned, I can do it on my own. And in fact, it's pretty risky to trust somebody else. They're usually, if you ask them how they're doing, they usually say fine, regardless if it was the worst day ever or the best day ever. Right? It's just fine. I'm doing all right. They tend to resist giving and receiving affection. That is uncomfortable because, again, they did not learn how to put language to those experiences. And so that is very intimidating for avoiders. Generally, they don't ask others to commit or invest emotionally. They tend to be task-oriented, so they fuel their energy into work or accomplishing something, right? Just because, by the way, just because you're one of these up here doesn't mean you're an avoider. It's just, generally speaking, avoiders, right? Sitting down and having an intimate conversation is, like, extremely scary because I'm sharing emotions and needs. But I can accomplish tasks. They prefer doing over emotional connection. They may feel resentful for the spouse wanting emotional connection. All right? Okay. So let's move on finally then to the couple interaction. All right? So when we move into our relationship as couples, as adults, in our marriage relationships, this is what we generally ask. Are you there for me? Okay, the acronym ARE. So it starts with accessibility, right? Accessibility is, can I reach you? Will you open up to me? When I come to you, right, will you be there? Will you be accessible to me? So one of the things we're talking about here is, remember, we have these imprints from our childhood. We bring them into our marriage relationship. Through this being accessible, responsive, and engaging, it begins to restore, right, connection and provide a safe place that we talked about. So the first one is accessibility. The next one is responsiveness. Can I rely on you to respond to me emotionally? So are you accessible? And then once you're accessible, will you respond? Like, will you have a steel face? Will you withdraw? Will you shut down? Will you verbally attack me? Or will you respond and connect with me emotionally? And then finally, stay engaged, right? Do I know you value me and that I'm important enough to stay engaged? So what I'd like to do is I want to act this out, but I need a couple from this room to help me act this out. It's a role play. I'll give you a script. Oh, wonderful. Great. Thank you. So Alyssa is now Barb. Hi, Barb. Good to meet you.
Great.
And Ben, you are Jim.
All right.
Okay. So let me just, before you start, I'm going to give you some context here, okay? So we talked about the avoider attachment style. So Ben here is an avoider, okay? So he grew up in a home, right, where his parents were, we learned about either disinterested, disengaged, overwhelmed. Maybe they were overwhelmed with other needs of other family members. And again, his perception was, my needs and my feelings don't matter. That's what he concluded. Right or wrong, that's what he concluded. Barb grew up in a home where she learned to be a pleaser. We didn't talk about the pleaser attachment style, okay? But the pleaser attachment style generally has a parent who is either overly critical, volatile, meaning they go from 0 to 60 pretty quick, and the other way around, right? Or there's anxiety or fear that can be part of that, okay? And so what she has learned, her attachment style is, to soothe emotion in mom is to please. If I do something that pleases, it soothes emotion, right? So early in their relationship, Jim is loving this. He's getting all kinds of attention because she is pleasing Jim. And so Jim feels pretty special. I mean, this marriage thing is great. But all of a sudden, Barb is like, this marriage thing isn't great. I'm pouring in, and he's not responsive, right? Well, I'll try to just do more. Well, it doesn't seem to help. It doesn't change. In fact, he's starting to withdraw more. And so now Barb's in a place, right, where her attachment security, meaning the safe base, that early on he was stable, right? He was there, a secure place for her, is now starting to avoid and withdraw and pull back. And so guess what happens to her? Her anxiety goes out the roof, right? And so that's where we're going to jump in. So let's start with you, Barb.
Did you hear what I just said?
Jim is staring out the window.
I'm listening.
And what did I say?
You were telling me about your dad.
Exactly what did I tell you, Jim?
Jim is getting more irritated and frustrated.
I don't know, Barb. You go on and on with so many details. Who can remember everything you say? I've told you that I'm tired when I come home from the office. I just need some peace and quiet. Is that too much to ask?
Jim's voice is rising now.
I'm going to work on my truck in the garage. Leave me alone for a while, okay?
Jim leaves the table.
It is so difficult to be with you. You act like being with me is some big chore.
Jim ignores Barb's comment. Barb moves to washing dishes. Barb is thinking, why isn't he helping me with dishes? Jim has been more distant lately. Maybe something else is going on, something really bad. Oh, I don't think he would be doing anything behind my back, but I don't know. Remember, I'm going to pause. Remember what Barb learned growing up, right? Attachment was pleasing, meaning she learned, if I can just figure out how to please, right? If I can figure out what's going on, we're going to solve this thing, okay? It just doesn't seem like he's attracted to me anymore. He just doesn't pay attention to me like he used to. When we were first married, all my friends talk about their husbands wanting to be with them and desiring sexual intimacy. I'd like to have that problem for a change. Maybe he's viewing pornography. Oh, I have to stop. I'm driving myself crazy trying to figure this out. Maybe I'll take a slice of Jim's favorite pie to the garage and sit with him. Maybe he will talk with me while he's working on his truck. He's always happy when he's working on that stupid truck. So Barb puts a slice of pie on a plate and heads to the garage.
Your favorite pie, special delivery.
Thanks.
As he takes the pie, or he takes the plate with the pie, and he sits on the workbench. It sits it on the workbench next to him. Barb moves towards Jim and sits beside him while she eats her pie.
What do you want, Barb?
Nothing. I don't want anything. I just decided to eat pie out here with you. I'll be quiet.
Jim sighs, tired of trying to explain himself.
Barb, don't take this personally, but I need some space, okay?
What? I can't even eat my pie out here?
Why don't you go read your new magazine? That came in the mail the other day.
I can read when you're not here, Jim. I haven't seen you all day, and I want to be together.
How many times do I have to say it?
Jim raises his voice.
Barb, I want my space.
Barb leaves her pie on the workbench and walks out of the garage without a word. Barb goes in the house and heads to the bedroom, where she cries quietly. The couple goes to bed, and the next morning, Barb comes to Jim.
Something is really wrong with our marriage, Jim. Every time I try to talk to you, you just avoid and ignore me.
Jim rolls his eyes. Sorry.
You always have to make a big deal out of nothing, Barb. I think our marriage is fine. You're the one who's always complaining, not me.
All right. So before you go, you guys did wonderful. Thank you. So this is kind of the story of a pleaser and avoider playing out in the couple relationship and kind of the interaction that was happening, which we'll talk about more. But one of the things I didn't say is, for Barb, she grew up in a family where her parents lost a child just before she was born. And so to mom, it makes sense why the world would be a scary place. It was scary to allow Barb out of her sight because of what happened, right? Which led to the pleaser attachment style. Thank you. All right, so let's unpack this just a little bit. Okay, so we talked about Jim. His attachment style is avoidant, okay? So what that means is when he was growing up, two of the things that he didn't receive was responsive presence, meaning when I came to parents in a distressing way, they didn't respond to me. Okay, that was the first thing. The second thing is emotional connection, to be connected emotionally, to put language to my experiences. So when these happen in the marriage relationship, guess what happens to Jim? He becomes overwhelmed with shame, possibly fear. Like, how do I do this emotion thing, right? This is a scary place, and I must be bad for feeling this because Remember back when all these times when I was hurt, I shouldn't have been crying, or I shouldn't have had the, I shouldn't have done that, right? So he feels shame. But consequently, he doesn't express those to Barb, right? What he expresses to Barb is the secondary emotion of anger and frustration. So notice here, primary and unattachment needs are under the surface. Those are the unseen forces. What Barb hears or sees is the anger and frustration and the sighs and the walking away, right? That's what she sees. She has to fill in the rest of the blanks. Next, Jim's perception is Barb's just too needy. She's smothering me. Like, just give me some space already, right? He even asked, he went out to the garage. And so what does he do to soothe that? He withdraws any voids, right? Which ultimately soothes the emotion, but not in a connecting way. So the emotion's soothed, but it's through withdrawing. So guess what happens then? As he withdraws, guess what that triggers? Barb's attachment insecurities, right? The fear in growing up in home was having a soothing base. And, oh, by the way, Jim was a pretty soothing base early in the relationship, but not any longer, right? When emotion comes, he runs. So for her, when she doesn't experience a soothing base, she feels like she's abandoned or rejected. Because even though mom might have been critical or dad might have been critical or volatile, at least they were always there. Jim isn't there. So when Barb feels the abandonment, fear, and rejection, instead of expressing this, what do we tend to express? It's safer. Think about it. It's much easier and safer, and we feel a whole lot more powerful if I just express anger and frustration. Then I'm telling my wife I'm afraid. That's being more vulnerable, right? That's taking a risk. So it's a whole lot easier for me just to express my secondary emotions. Again, that's what Jim sees. Then Barb starts thinking about, you know what? I'm just alone. I'm invisible. He doesn't care about me, right? I'm just in this relationship alone. He doesn't respond to me. So she pleases, she makes the favorite pie to lower her anxiety, right? And to soothe that attachment fear, or engages in hypervigilant behavior, which means looks and scans the environment, tries to find a way that she can please or at least be noticed by Jim in any way. It's deeply painful to be in this, right? Alone and not seen. Like that child, right? Yelling or crying or to get anyway. Again, what you'll notice, though, is to Barb, all she sees is his behavior and a secondary emotion. And she fills in the blanks from there. And for Jim, all he sees is she continues to please and pursue him. And maybe he sees the jealousy and maybe some anger and resentment. Right? Okay, so what I'd like you to do is, this is a reflection exercise I just really want you to take away with, but we've touched on two, really only one in depth, is the avoider style. So in the appendix, what I'd like you to do is read through those later, sometime, and initially, I think it's good to individually reflect. If I were to pick and an attachment style, what would be my primary attachment style? Okay? What do I most fit with? Identify the attachment style, which most closely represents the way you respond or behave in your marriage. It may be helpful to highlight specific characteristics and even touch on experiences. One of the helpful things is think back to the last disconnect you had. Not just a argument, right? But a painful disconnect that you had in your relationship. And use those as examples for this. Schedule some time to sit down and talk about it, and then focus on identifying your couple cycle. I'm actually going to take you through an exercise that will help you with that as well. So I'm going to walk through this with you. And one of the things we're trying to do is, again, the idea is when we have disconnects, there's things running under the surface. It's helpful for us to be aware of that, because if Barb knows what's going on under the surface, already her perspective has changed. And it's no longer about me. And then I can come around and support each other. And that's what this is about, is to understand if I'm only getting from Jim, he's withdrawing, right? If I'm only getting from Jim, he's withdrawing and he's angry and resentful, well, man, I've got to fill in the blanks. And so maybe it's me, maybe I'm doing something wrong. But if I start to understand there's something going on the surface and he feels a ton of shame when I start expressing needs and emotions, now we're on a different level for a conversation. Does that make sense? So, for you, when blank happens, I do not feel safely connected to you. This is an individual exercise, by the way. This isn't about blaming our spouse. But it is about what is our dance or what is our cycle. Because not everybody's relationship is going to look the same. It's going to look very different than Jim and Barb's. So, when blank happens, and these are examples, when we fight about my parenting, when we don't seem to speak for days, when you say you're too tired for sex and we haven't made love in a few weeks, what is it that whatever this happens that I don't feel safely connected to you? The next is, how do you manage that pain? We all manage pain differently and cope with that pain, okay? So I tend to blank. I behave this way to try to cope with the difficult feelings, to find a way to change our interaction. So for Jim, he withdrew, right? He created space. For some, they might complain or nag or, you know, like Jim did, run away. What does it look like? What do you do to cope with the pain of disconnection in your relationship? Next, I do it in the hope that blank. Remember, back to that video, that child was screeching and turning away to try to get in. She tried to do anything to get mom's attention. Even if it was negative attention, at least she's paying attention to me. And sometimes we do that in our marriage relationship, right? I've heard some that have told me, I would rather my spouse yell at me than not say anything. Because then at least I know there's something going on, right? Now, that's not saying it's okay to yell. That's in context of how painful it is to be disconnected, right? I do it in hope that what will happen. What's your desire? What's your hope here? So examples, we will avoid more conflict, or I will persuade you to respond to me, right? To notice me. As this pattern keeps going, I feel frustrated, confused, numb, empty. Right? As this plays out in a relationship, what goes on for you? What I then say to myself about a relationship is, you don't care about us, I'm not important to you, I can never please you. What is it? When you get in that point of numbness or just, what is it that you start telling yourself? My understanding of the cycle that makes it harder for us to safely connect is that when I move in the way described above, right, over here, that I tend to do this to cope with my feelings, my understanding of the cycle that it makes it harder for us to safely connect is that when I move in the way described above, you seem to do what? How does the spouse respond? Right? How does your spouse respond? When you're trying to cope with the pain, your spouse is doing something as well. The more I blank, the more you blank, we are both trapped in pain and isolation. So for Jim and Barb, the more she pursued, tried to please, the more Jim distanced, withdrew, isolated because it's overwhelming. And they were caught in a cycle, right? It didn't always play out that way, right? But that was underneath the surface. And the idea of this is then for you as a couple, my heart would be is what does our cycle look like? And when can we begin? Because when we can begin to recognize the cycle, it's then us together trying to understand the cycle, because the idea of attachment is we bring more things into this relationship than we realize. Marriage is hard work. right? I heard one use the analogy of a blender, making a smoothie and turning it on and just grinding it, right? And sometimes it feels like that. And the reality is that sometimes things come out in marriage that let's go back to Jim and Barb. Now, was Barb's pleasing caused by the marriage relationship? Or was it there all along? And it just came out in the marriage relationship. See, if we understand it in that light, there's empathy and understanding that we help connect to each other in those wounds, right? And by God's grace, then can support and encourage each other. So just a couple helpful questions. So really, these last few slides are about just giving you some things to take away and to do as a couple. I think these are some helpful ones. Name two concrete and specific things as safe, accessible, responsive. Remember the R. Are you there? Accessible, responsive, and engaged, right? So what does that look like on a typical day? Right? So even asking your spouse that, what does that look like for you? What does it look like to be safe in the relationship? Think about what you most need in order to feel secure and loved by your spouse and share it with them. What does that look like practically? Seek not to personalize your spouse's move in your couple's cycle. So one of the things that we saw play out there, right, is that both Jim and Barb were taking on their spouse's negative emotion. Right? The more Barb pursued Jim, Jim became overwhelmed. And so meaning Jim was taking on Barb's anxiety to please, right? Which more overwhelmed him and vice versa. So when we talk through this, it can be a helpful thing to realize, not to personalize like it's my responsibility to fix my spouse or to change my spouse, but just listen and understand their experience. Continue to practice the skill of self-reflection to learn about your own emotional experiences. All right, these are the resources. If, by the way, if you don't want to read through the rest of the appendix and you just want to go online, you can take a quiz. They have a How We Love quiz on their website, this link right here. We'll take you to it. It's free. I think it takes 15 minutes. And they will shoot you the response of what style you are and tell you a little bit about it. They won't tell you everything because they want you to buy some things. But it gives you some good information for free. This is their book. And then I also reference this, which the Created for Connection is more about the relationship. Now, How We Love goes into this background and history, kind of what I did in this presentation. So there's also another one out there that comes at it from a different angle. It's called DNA of Relationships. Maybe some of you have heard it. Gary Smalley has written it, but they come at it at a different angle, but it's a similar type of deal where the idea is we push each other's fear button and we don't know it. And so they go about identifying that fear and then identifying that cycle through that fear. So that's another resource that you may be interested in. So, all right. Well, thank you for your attention, and thank you for Jim and Barb. I mean, Ben and Alyssa for offering to come up here. Appreciate that.